The subject of this service today is a practice we call compassionate communication. It has also been called nonviolent communication, or NVC for short. Many people now use the two names interchangeably. And Sue Daly, our speaker today, will explain more of that history. Marshall Rosenberg, whose words I'm about to share, was one of the first and perhaps the best known proponent of this view of human life and interpersonal relationships. His book, titled Nonviolent Communication, is still a bestseller, and he himself mentored many of the people who are now teaching this practice worldwide. When sometimes I get caught up in the small details of how we try to practice compassionate or nonviolent communication, I hope I will remember these words of Marshall Rosenberg. Rosenberg wrote, "I think it is important that people see that spirituality is at the basis of nonviolent communication, and that they learn the mechanics of the process with that in mind. Even if people practice nonviolent communication as a mechanical technique, they start to experience things between themselves and other people that they were not able to experience before. So eventually, they come to the spirituality of the process. They begin to see that it's more than a communication process and realize it's really an attempt to manifest a certain spirituality. And Rosenberg continued, "The spiritual basis for me is that I'm trying to connect with the divine energy in others and connect them with the divine in me. Because I believe that when we are really connected with that divinity within each other and within ourselves, we then enjoy contributing to one another's well-being more than anything else. In this place, violence is impossible." Our speaker today is well known to most of us. Sue Daly and her partner, Carl Etter, have two homes, one in Duluth, one here in Thunder Bay. They have joined us at Sunday services for several years now, in person when they are in Thunder Bay and COVID regulations permit, or like most of us for the last year and a half on Zoom. Sue grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, but has lived for a long time now in Minnesota. She was raised as a Unitarian, and throughout her life, she has been active in social justice issues. In one of her many roles as a member of the UU Church of Duluth, she helped to form a peace and justice committee. And through that work, came to know the practice called nonviolent communication or compassionate communication in workshops with Anne Harrington. Many of you will remember Anne for the two workshops she offered here in the spring and fall of 2019. Sue introduced us to Anne, and was one of a small group of people who worked hard to bring her to Thunder Bay. Since early in the pandemic, Sue has been leading a Zoom group to learn, in her words, this language of compassion and empathy. I invite Sue to the microphone now, with participation of several of our practice group members. She will paint us a picture. What is compassionate communication?
Thank you, Bettina, for that introduction. It's great to be here today and to see all of you here in person and online. Throughout this pandemic, I've been facilitating a compassionate communication group on Zoom, as Bettina explained. At first, I thought people might be looking for a good excuse to visit online. But they were serious. They asked me for an agenda of the meeting. We usually ran out of time. So then they asked me to include times in the agenda. When I was asked to be the speaker here today, I was glad to accept because I'm passionate that these skills promote a more understanding and authentic connection between people. Gandhi once said, "It is the acid test of nonviolence that in a nonviolent context." That in a nonviolent contest, there is no rancor left behind. And in the end, the enemies are converted into friends. While I'm not shy about speaking up, I was wary about addressing the congregation today because I'm uncomfortable speaking in front of a group of people. So I'm very grateful that several people in our group agreed to share their experiences with you too. I think you'll find that together with their participation, we offer a more engaging and comprehensive perspective. Marshall Rosenberg developed nonviolent communication, often referred to as NVC, as a way to speak peace, a way that values connections with people more than being right or winning. He worked as a peacemaker around the world. NVC focuses on observations, feelings, needs, and requests. Even negative feelings like fear and anger are valuable clues that help us recognize what universal needs or values are driving our feelings. Food and money are not needs in NVC. They are strategies for meeting needs, needs such as shelter, safety, comfort, or autonomy. Tom Bond, whose online program our practice group has been following, worked closely with Rosenberg. They noticed that the name nonviolent communication often triggers a negative reaction in some people, but the name has stuck. So Tom Bond called his program Compassionate Communication. It has 72 lessons, one for each week of the year on Zoom. He helps us work towards a feelings and needs awareness, a compassionate consciousness. Everything anyone says or does is an effort to meet a need. If we can connect with someone's needs, then we are better able to work through our differences. For just a moment, consider what is your relationship with your feelings? A couple months ago, David talked about reason, about how the thinking mind and intelligence are encouraged while we're taught to suppress negative emotions. After all, they're dangerous, aren't they? I know that I was taught to control my emotions. I remember once coming home from school angry. My teacher had accused me in class of lying about doing my homework when I didn't know the answer to a question. My father's response was to recite the words of a poem. "You are the captain of your ship, the master of your soul." In other words, get control of yourself, stifle those feelings. I'm sure I got that same message in other ways too. Years later, when I started dating someone, my best friend asked me how I felt. The only way I knew to respond was to give her pros and cons. Most of us were raised in a culture where we learned right from wrong. It feels right when we're angry at people who don't do what we think they should. We scold ourselves for doing the wrong thing. In our practice groups, we're trying to unlearn this lifetime of judging. Instead, we're learning to wonder, what needs are people trying to meet? It's not easy. I was at an event a few years back when space was an issue. One woman, I'll call her Jane, was setting up a table to sign people in and take money. Priscilla and I were setting up another table for a different purpose. Priscilla complained that we didn't have enough room. She told me, she's backing us into a corner. Jane takes over everything. I went over and asked Jane what was going on at her table and what space did she need. I let her know what we were doing. Pretty soon, both tables were set up and everything was fine. I was surprised when Priscilla said to me, "Wow, you really handled her well." Not all conflicts are that simple. I'm still learning to make friends with my feelings and recognize my needs. This fellowship embraced NVC many years ago when Trudy Jones organized a practice group here. On Sunday mornings for several years, she welcomed us with tea, candles, and opening words. That group organized the well-attended workshops by Ann Harrington in the hall at Unitarian House. A practice group continued meeting after that in the evenings until COVID changed everything. Since then, about 10 of us have been meeting on Zoom. Some of them are here today to share what this learning experience has meant to them. First, please welcome Raya Workington.
Good morning. Growing up in Finland, we were not encouraged to pay attention to feelings, and especially not needs. They were embarrassing. A couple of years ago, I joined the workshop on compassionate communication. We received lists of words for universal human feelings and universal human needs. Almost 300 words, what nuances of words. I needed a dictionary to understand some of them. Empathy buddies make these lists alive. We were encouraged to find an empathy buddy. They don't say, "Poor you, I pity you." No, an empathy session goes like this. We alternate telling a situation in our mind. Together, we start to discover underlying feelings and needs. Like shopping for a coat and trying them on, we try words if they fit the situation. We pick feeling words from the lists. Did you feel afraid? How about alarmed? Were you apprehensive, anxious? And then from the needs list, did you have a need for security? How about order, peace of mind, safety, stability? I had a eureka moment to understand my lifelong need ever since my childhood. With compassionate communication, I'm getting to know myself. I'm connecting with myself. I'm also working on connection with other human beings to build a better world for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Raya. Next, we'll be hearing from our harmonica accompanist, Frank Pilari.
Thanks, Susan. Good morning, everybody. In addition to loving skiing, I also love cycling. And a while ago, I went on a tour with a total of 5 guys and a van. 4 people would ride while 1 person would drive the van. Now, the problem with me is I don't drive because I have visual limitations. So I felt that I was not going to contribute as much as the rest of the guys. So I needed to feel accepted. So I thought, I know what I could do. How about if I offer to load and unload the bikes from the roof of the van every time at the end of the day? That way I would feel more accepted. But the owner of the van would always insist that he load and unload the van. Unload the bikes from the roof. I offered many times, but it was his van, so I didn't feel like I should push it because he had the final responsibility of his van. I felt kind of angry and baffled that he was being over-controlling or wanting to be the hero or had some kind of martyr issues. All of my judgments painted a negative picture of him in my mind, and which spilled over into other aspects of the trip, which took some of the shine out of the whole experience for me. I needed to feel accepted, and I didn't have a way yet of contributing. I finally asked him why he would not let me load and unload the bikes. He said that he would not want me to possibly drop the bike on the roof, which would possibly dent his roof or even put a hole in the roof. He said that he'd be okay with being angry at himself, but he would not want to be angry with me. Knowing that made me feel better about the situation. I was more able to empathize with his approach. I dropped my judgmental feelings of him and felt that the rest of the trip had less tension and had more shine. Thanks.
Thank you, Frank. Next, I'd like to introduce my sister, who's here on Zoom, Jan Schnell. She'll share some music with us.
Thank you, Sue. I heard the upcoming song, Swimming to the Other Side, and instantly loved the way it combined a view of the world I embrace with perfect folk music. It reinforces my belief that almost every person is trying to do the best they can. I envision looking down on people of all shapes and colors swimming across a river under the Great Big Dipper. My first year at university, when I felt unhappy and not sure I was supposed to be there, I would climb a hill, lie down in the grass, contemplate the constellations, and realize my issues were trivial. It helped fulfill my needs for connection to nature, self-respect, freedom, and peace. Now we will listen to Swimming to the Other Side by Pat Humphreys. We won't stand, but feel free to sing or hum along. I hope you will see this song as a stepping stone to peace in the world. Thank you.
We are living 'neath a great same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. I am alone, I am searching, hungering for answers in my time. I am balanced at the brink of wisdom. I'm impatient to receive a sign. I move forward with my senses open. Imperfection can be my crime. In humility, I will listen. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living in the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. On this journey through thoughts and feelings, binding intuition, my head, my heart, I am gathering the tools together. I'm preparing to do my part. All of those who've come before me, band together and be my guide. Loving lessons that I will follow. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream together, some in power and some in vain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. Beginning, and we never noticed they were there. We can balance at the brink of wisdom, never recognizing that we've arrived. Loving spirits will live together. We're all swimming to the other side. We are living beneath the great big dipper. We are washed by the very same rain. We are swimming in the stream. Some in power and some in pain. We can worship this ground we walk on, cherishing the beings that we live beside. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side. Loving spirits will live forever. We're all swimming to the other side.
Thank you, Jan, for sharing that with us. And thank you, David, for putting together that wonderful video to share, help us bring that to you. Our next speaker, I'd like you to welcome Lynn Vandenberg.
That'll be fine. Thanks. Okay. All right. Compassion communication has helped me be less reactive, but this is an ongoing learning curve. As a result, I've been able to feel more peace. The one concept that really helped me and I just thought was amazing was the concept that judgments can give you information about feelings and unmet needs. And this has really helped me in this regard. There's not the idea that we should stop judging because we can't really do that, but that we can use the information, whether it's judgments we have of ourselves or judgments of other people, or we hear others' judgments of themselves or others or towards us. So I'm going to give an example. This is another biking example that wasn't planned. But it was a beautiful day a few weeks ago where I was biking on Court Street, where it's supposed to be bike path. And I don't know, I was just feeling very happy, and I wasn't stopping for stop signs, but I was being very careful and looked around. Normally I kind of follow all the rules. So I sidled up to this car at the stop sign, and the car was stopped. There was no other traffic around, and I just slowly went through. Then all of a sudden I heard this person just yelling at me, just talking to me like I was an idiot and I was some child. I felt really judged, and I kind of had a reaction side to that. But then I thought about it, and I think it's because maybe all the practice we've done, because I wasn't trying. All of a sudden I thought, well, because she had turned, and I thought, you know, well, maybe she was just really scared. Maybe I had missed her blind, I'd been in her blind side, and all of a sudden me being there and going forward, she might have thought to herself, well, what if I had just hit her? You know, she had an unmet need for safety for herself and probably for me as well. So as a result of thinking that way, the anger and the disturbance I felt just kind of calmed down, and I suddenly had more compassion for her. I did feel more peace, and I resolved to be more considerate of motorists in the future and try to follow the traffic rules. Anyhow, thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Our last speaker is Michelle Landry. She is not in our group. She's reading a piece by Rosemary Burris, who's out of town and can't be with us today. Michelle?
Thank you. I'm honored this morning to share Rosemary's experiences written in her words. I was slow to join the initial NVC activities here at LUF, but now, 2 years later, I can say that my sessions with the group and with my empathy buddy have improved my life. I would like to share a situation where the techniques I've been learning saved me from a painful disconnect from one of my siblings. This was in September of 2020. Our family has 4 properties on a peninsula owned by me and my 3 siblings, and 2 houses on the island opposite, owned by a niece and nephew. During that first COVID summer, the island people bubbled together along with their parents on the mainland, all of them following strict guidelines. When I arrived for my September stay, I was also accepted inside one of these bubbles because I was deemed safe. However, one of my siblings and their spouse were still excluded. This in-law confronted me, upset with how I was accepted while they were not. At one point, my in-law hotly accused me of being responsible for poisoning their relations with the others by circulating that they were not following the COVID rules. I tried to deal with these arguments, but left with damage clearly done and feeling sick and anxious. I have always been afraid of conflict. The intensity of that first encounter had left me trembling, but I felt that time alone was not going to solve this. Over the next few days, I used a technique called the double T. I plotted my feelings. I was afraid and heartbroken and yearned for a way to make things right again. Next, I wrote down my needs for harmony with my family and for physical safety during the COVID threat. Then I put their needs and feelings on a chart parallel to my own. I began to feel more empathy and understanding. At the same time, my fear of their anger began to lessen. I felt more hopeful and ready to risk a second encounter. I asked the couple if they had time and felt comfortable talking about the situation. For the first few minutes, I mostly listened, sometimes hazarding a guess at how they might be feeling. There were several returns to the initial complaints, but I kept listening, reminding myself of my need to connect. In a quiet moment, I was able to explain that during a phone call, my sibling had admitted that they were not following all the COVID rules. My sibling confirmed this, and my in-law immediately dropped the attack mode. I knew that the situation had been diffused, and over the course of the next few months, I was able to regain the closeness I so value. I didn't manage to follow all the NVC steps or use all the tools perfectly, but I knew that I had experienced a totally different process and outcome than I ever could have imagined.
Thank you, Michelle, and thank you for all of your contributions. In the interest of, I would like to offer a meditation at this time to give all of you a moment to enter into an NVC consciousness. In the interest of time, I will speed it up a little bit. Please make yourselves comfortable and feel free to close your eyes if you choose. Think about somebody you're not that happy with now. And think along with me. Just like me, this person is seeking some happiness in their life, just like me. Just like me, this person is trying to avoid suffering in this life, just like me. Just like me, this person has known sadness, loneliness, and despair just like me. Still thinking of this person, just like me, this person is seeking to fulfill their needs, just like me. Just like me, this person is learning about life, just like me. We invite any of you to approach us following the service, either here on Zoom. We welcome your comments or questions about compassionate communication, about our group, or where we may go from here. Thank you for your time, caring, and attention.